90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City, Community Radio. Streaming online at www.kkfi.org.
The views and opinions of this program are those of its host and guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of 90.1 FM, KKFI, Midcoast Radio Project, or its staff and volunteers.
Welcome to Cowtown Conversations. I'm your hostess, Marvita Oliver, back from a vacation on the coast, and still there's no place like home, so we're glad to be back. They have issues out in larger cities like increased taxes, crime, and low-income housing in their upcoming elections, and seems like we're dealing with some of the same. Today, our guest, is a candidate for KCMO's own, the Kansas City Council 3rd District at Large. We were going to have two candidates here, and that State Representative Brandon Ellington and Pastor Wallace S. Hartfield II. Both candidates were given an opportunity to be a guest today, but Pastor Hartfield declined, citing a previous engagement. So you get the show all to yourself today, State Representative Brandon Ellington. Welcome to Countdown Conversations. How are you doing?
I'm doing good.
Great. Well, I just want to let you know that we're going to be asking you some questions just to help the audience get a better understanding about who you are and what your how you're standing on different policies in your district. Want to start with just an opportunity to get to know you a little bit better. Can you briefly give me maybe 2 minutes on who you are and introduce yourself to the audience, please?
All right. Well, currently I'm the state representative for the 22nd district. I was first elected in 2011. Since being elected, I've been literally in leadership every year since I've been there. Started off as the Black Caucus vice chair, then I moved to the Black Caucus chair, and I'm currently the Democratic whip. Before being in office, I started a couple nonprofits that are still in existence right now. I'm My Brother's Keeper, Voices of the People, GYRL, I'm a co-founder of, which is Giving Yourself Real Love. And then We the People is a nonpartisan political action committee that was founded a few years ago. So with I'm My Brother's Keeper, we do male mentoring outreach. With GYRL, it's Giving Yourself Real Love, so we do domestic violence forums, seminars, have emergency shelter resources, assistance for women and children. With We the People, it's a nonpartisan political action committee, so we teach free political classes, legal classes. I do a lot. And I can keep going, but I do a lot.
Okay, that was a lot. I was trying to keep up with it all.
And I miss a lot of stuff, but I just want to get to the conversation.
Sure. Hey, well, that does sound like a lot between male mentoring, outreach, as well as teaching people about politics. Is that what We the People does?
Yeah, so we do the free political and legal classes. Uh-huh. So it's three courses that we administer in the legal courses. First would be political theory, getting people accommodated and comfortable with political language and understanding. Then we do comparative politics, where we compare state and federal political regimes and how different states implement policy, et cetera. And then we do rural politics, where we actually compare the United States government political mechanism against different countries' political mechanisms, so people inside of the party have a full understanding of the political apparatus.
Okay, that's a lot. That's a mouthful. So when you say you teach these classes, is this just for people in the 3rd district or anybody?
No, my classes is open to everybody.
And where do you teach them?
We typically do them in the 3rd district off of 38th and Chestnut. In the past, we've done them at the Mary Kelly Center. We've also done them at the library. We've also created communiversities through this same program. So it's all about educating the folks. So I typically do it at my satellite office off of 3836 Chestnut, and the courses are roughly 4 to 6 weeks. depending on some's political understanding. And it's also a mandate for members inside the party. Now, if people are already politically astute, they don't have to go through the political classes. But if people aren't politically astute, they have to go through the political classes, because we don't want anybody politically ignorant inside of the party.
And so when you say the party, which party is that?
We the People. It's a non-partisan political action committee. When I say party, in my ideology and in God's timing, it will become a recognized national party that actually is very engaged in winning policy actions at the state house, at the federal house, and then on the local level.
All right. Well, that was mouthful. And I mean, you came in here and kind of rat-a-tat-tatted everything down for me. I was trying to keep up, so I think I'm on the same question with you. I do have one question about your classes. So are these free classes?
Yes, ma'am. Everything that we do is free, from the domestic violence services, the emergency shelters, the mentoring classes, the community university, the community events. I charge for nothing that we do.
Okay.
And everything has been community funded, since we're talking about it. So a couple of the organizations are recognized nonprofits with the 501(c) status. However, we do not use that to generate funds.
Mm-hmm.
That was just one of the protections that you had to have. But none of the organizations that I mentioned, from All My Brothers Keeper to GRL to Voices of the People, none of those organizations charge for any of their services. And it's all self-funded and sustained from the community.
So how is that possible, for the things to be self-funded and sustained?
It's called community self-determination. So when we look at the inner city of Kansas City, we have a lot of elements that are non-active. We don't have jobs is a major concern. But then we also don't have owners, to actually business owners that live in the community that would be providing jobs. And that's one of the essential rules of engagement in America, is ownership. So when we talk about the services, I'm going to mention a couple of things that I hadn't mentioned. So on 38th and Chestnut, we are actually creating a model block. And what that means is we've acquired up to 4 properties over there, a couple lots, a couple houses. The lots we're turning into community gardens. One lot is going to be a domestic violence memorial to victims of domestic violence, etc. My satellite office is there again. That's 3836 Chestnut. The house next to that, we're renovating into a reading and resource center. And then the house across the street from that, we acquired, and we currently have people rehabbing that house, and that's becoming a domestic violence emergency shelter. And again, all of this has been provided from the community, so we partner with people that provide skills, such as the carpenters that are over there. Shout out to Damon Patterson, because he's over there now rehabbing one of the properties. But a lot of these individuals donate their skills and their time, and it's the same when we talk about the community university and the law classes. So Mr. Paul Pierce, who's an attorney, is one of the individuals that actually helps me, used to help me consistently administrate the political classes. So we find people, and currently the legal classes have been taken over by the Jackson County Bar Association. So Judge Otto, a few years back, said that she would love to get all of the judges involved, and if they would take it over, and they've been doing it since then. Yeah. So we find sustainable ways to actually move programs. Like I said, I left a lot out, and the more we go,
I didn't even want to break in, because you were just going through so much. So from what I'm getting, though, there's a substantial amount of involvement in the district, and I hope the listeners out there are hearing where you guys are located. That's 3836 Chestnut,
mm-hmm.
and the types of things that you're doing, as far as the buying properties, renovating properties, providing jobs, and changing the economic landscape, as well as the physical landscape of the community. So when you get into that kind of change, that renovating a community, it lets me see that you have some ideas of, like, what are the top concerns in a community. So if you were able to let the voters know in district, in the 3rd District, what would be those top five concerns facing those people living in 3rd District?
Well, this is an interesting thing. So the 3rd District reflects the city at large in certain aspects. So when we talk about infrastructure repair and maintenance, it reflects certain parts of the city with road repairs that are non-existent in the 3rd District. It's a lot of trash in the 3rd District, which is a major issue. But the overarching issue would be violence and the transitional nature of people in the 3rd District. So it's a lot of violent crimes that happen in the 3rd District that's been happening since I can remember. And we have the same excuses, the same with the lack of investment, viable investment in infrastructure, from the streets to maintaining the buildings to producing economic density, which goes back to the ownership that I mentioned in the very beginning. In order to have a viable, diverse tax base, it has to be business owners that live in that area that are actually benefiting from the area. When you look at the 3rd District, it has been economically isolated for a couple of reasons, but one of the main reasons is lack of businesses in that area, lack of ownership in that area, which leads to high unemployment in that area. So employment is an issue in the 3rd District. Public safety is an issue in the 3rd District. Infrastructure repair is definitely an issue in the 3rd District. Now, overlapping that with the entire city, tax incentive reforms is an issue. So in the 3rd District, it has some of the highest sales tax rates in the city at large because of all the sales taxes that we passed with no associated development. Well, that's similar to the city. So the city has passed several specialized projects that increases property value, increases the sales tax rates on areas surrounding the specialized projects that they don't necessarily benefit from right now. And the same with the infrastructure. When you drive through the city, it's almost like playing whack-a-mole with your car, hitting potholes and bouncing from corner to corner because the potholes are in such close proximity. So I see economic density as an issue in the 3rd District. I see tax diversification an issue citywide. I see infrastructure an issue in the 3rd District and an issue citywide. I see trash collection and removal an issue, and it's an extreme issue in the 3rd District with dumping.
Okay, well, that was even more than five.
I'm sorry, I wouldn't count.
No, no problem. Because, I mean, I was thinking I would be generous and say three. But you went over things like economic density, employment, public safety, infrastructure, tax diversity, and trash collection. And so those are some of the things that you see as the concerns, some of the top concerns facing those in the 3rd District, as well as some of those overlap into the city as well. Mm-hmm. So with this in mind, why do you feel like you're the person to help address some of these issues?
Because of my my track record actually producing wins for the district that I currently represent, and my understanding of politics. So when you understand how to actually incentivize and increase the proliferation of small businesses, that's something that's essential. When you understand how the city engages with the state and with the feds, that becomes extremely important when you talk about things of affordable housing and different mechanisms to do development and codify diverse development in the city. The same when we talk about public safety, reducing crime, and also the city services and tax incentive reforms. A lot of people, and particularly on the east side, they don't have a good understanding of the economic tools that we have in the city. And I think that's one of the reasons why you see most of the so-called east side leaders run to promote sales taxes, which by definition and nature are regressive, and they hit poor people the most. So why would you proliferate a regressive tax in a poor area of the town with no associated benefits to benefit the area? That shows a lack of political understanding.
Well, I think that you're bringing some raising some key concerns, especially when it comes to not only the citizens understanding, you know, the politics of politics, but also politicians. Mm-hmm. You kind of hope that the people who are actually running for office kind of have a sense of what they might need to do, but a lot of the people is from what you're saying, don't really have that.
Well, I'll give you a couple examples that prove this is not an opinion and this is actually a fact. So the mayor of Kansas City and the city council, a few years ago, they created a minimum wage push at the city level. Well, the problem with this is that anybody that is politically astute would have realized in 1995, the city of St. Louis tried this exact same thing, and it was ruled down by the Supreme Court. Now, we at this time on the council, we've had five lawyers. The mayor's a lawyer. The 6th district in district is a lawyer. The 5th district in district is a lawyer. The 3rd district at large is a lawyer. Am I missing one? Okay, so it's four lawyers. I think I'm missing one now. But anyway, it's four lawyers. So these four lawyers, and one is actually a law professor. They should have definitely understood the difference between constitutional conflicts. And what I mean by that, the state is responsible for setting the minimum wage. But they never came up to the state to lobby. They only did it down here in the city. So either that shows a severe misunderstanding of the body of politics, or it shows intentional orchestration of the voters, because the voters don't know. They think these elected leaders know what they're talking about. Mm-hmm. And they proved that they didn't. And I can go on and on about different initiatives that the city has talked about that they can't do at the state level. I even give you one that came from our councilman in the 3rd district when he was talking about ban the box. Well, you can only ban the box at the local level.
Ban the box is about what?
For felons, take the question off. And they did a nice PR push. Everybody thought the box was going to be banned, but they could only do it at the city level with city services and city jobs, right? They really wanted to have some type of influence that would have did it at the state level. And again, this either shows political orchestration or lack of political understanding. And it's the same with some of the gun ordinances that the mayor talks about, which is in conflict with the constitutional rights to carry in state law. We have a lot of issues down here at the local level that I believe has been intentionally orchestrated to mislead the voters.
That's a mouthful. Okay.
But it's all true, though.
No, I hear you. All right. So what I'm hearing is that people need to be educated about what's going on. And it's nothing personal. This isn't an attack, but it's like, understand, if you want to change the law, understand what it takes to change the law and where you have to go to make that change. Don't just throw out stuff to say I did it. Well, this is nobody voted for it.
Yeah, but this is why we have ineffective organizing and overt political change. It's not that policies and laws are set in concrete where they can't be rewritten. It's that policies and laws are set in certain procedures. And if you don't understand those procedures and how to work those procedures, you get nothing. I give you an example. So this year, I was involved in helping get Cameron Penitentiary closed down. And one of the issues that I had with some of the activists that was out there is they was going after the warden. And I was like, why would you talk to a warden who is an employee of the department and has no authority to do anything outside of the policies that is already set? So if you actually want to change something, we do it at the top level. And it comes down, we start with the director. And it would be the same when we talk about law enforcement, premises, and powers. We always go to the precinct, but we never go to the police board locally to actually set in stone the policies that we want our law enforcement to adhere to.
Okay, well, I think we're getting a class right now. But for all of you who are listening, this is Cowtown Conversations. And if you have any questions, I think you got somebody that's ready to answer them. And that's State Representative Brandon Ellington. He is here on Cowtown Conversations. If you have any questions out there, and I know y'all have questions, but you can call 816-931-5534. Getting back to some of the things you were talking about, I would like to know, you talked a little bit about it, but can you just give us a little bit more focused answer on what you propose to increase economic development and jobs in the 3rd district? I know you talked about buying homes and renovating them, and I know you talked about that you have to have people who can give jobs if you're going to have some kind of economic development or sustainable development. Can you go through that a little bit more so people can understand what you mean and what types of things you feel are doable in the 3rd District?
Yeah, in order to increase economic density, one has to first diversify the tax base, meaning you can't have all of the taxation coming from one mechanism, whether that's sales tax or anything else that is potentially regressive. So the first thing we have to do is start incentivizing, build, and increasing the amount of businesses that is in the area. So looking at the local economic tools, one of the things I'm going to be looking to do is to create mixed development usages. So mixed development usages brings in a major tenant, whether that's a company or something that brings people to the area, and then you mix that with housing development and shopping alternatives, which diversifies the tax base.
So can you give like a example of what size and what scale you're talking about when you're talking about mixed development?
I can give you examples of areas. So the east side of Kansas City is pretty much devoid of development. So when you look off of Manuel Cleaver, that area will qualify for different dollars. It will qualify for some federal dollars and some state dollars and some EPA dollars to actually clean up the contamination because it's an old manufacturing district. So that's the area that can be utilized for mixed development usage out the gate, coupled with multi-dollars that aren't coming out of the coffers of the citizens' pockets down here. When you look at elements of the east side going from the 30s on out to the 80s, you see a lot of vacant buildings and vacant houses. Well, these are things that we want to definitely tie into affordable housing and, again, development of that area, which increases the livability, which increases the economic base. One of the things that I push for is small business growth and incentives. So understanding state tax credits and small business opportunities, this is one of the things I'm going to be looking to develop inside of some of these infrastructure buildings that have not been rehabilitated, not that haven't been rehabilitated. Also, the restructuring and reusage of certain tax incentive reforms. So the tax incentive reforms on the local level range from the TIFs, which is tax increment financing, TDDs, which is transportation development districts, obviously the sales tax, which I have issues with, CIDs, community improvement districts, CBDGs, NIDs, and enterprise zones. So understanding and mixing.
Is enterprise zones the same as opportunity zones?
Yeah, you can. Yeah, you can co-mingle them with those, pretty much. The same mechanism.
Okay, so once again, I'm taking notes. But right now, we have a caller on line one. Caller, thanks for calling in. Can you tell us? Okay, looks like we lost that caller, but that gives you other guys plenty of chance. And that gives me a chance to go back and say, okay, so you talked about who? this is challenging my note taking today.
I'm sorry.
So we do have another caller on the line, and I do understand why. There's a lot of stuff you're bringing out. This is like the dust is flying. But we have a caller, and can you please tell us your name and where you're located in the city, and let us know the question you have for the representative.
Okay, my name is Donna. I'm calling from north of the river in Kansas City. And my question for Representative Ellington is about a phrase that we hear often regarding tax, and that is regressive tax, taxes that are regressive. And could you just please explain what a regressive tax is and what may be a better alternative to regressive taxes might be? Thank you.
All right. That's easy. A regressive tax is a tax opposite of a progressive tax, which takes the larger percentage from those who earn higher income. Examples of regressive taxes include sales taxes and property taxes, which are set at a flat percentage rate regardless of, I think I just lost my, regardless of the purchaser or the owner. Also, what is meant by regressive tax? Although the United States has a progressive taxation system, which comes into income tax, meaning higher income owners pay a higher percentage of taxes each year compared to those with a lower income, but we pay certain levels considered. So all that means is when you have sales taxes is typically something that you pay on the back end as opposed to the front end. The same with property taxes. On the east side of Kansas City, the taxation mechanism that we typically use are sales taxes. In the Northland, you see more TIFs utilized Northland, you see more TIFs utilized. Downtown, you see more TDDs utilized, which gives you a different tax base. In the state, Kansas City and the city of St. Louis has the highest taxation of anybody, any municipality throughout the entire state. Ours ranges, a medium is 11.5, and it goes up to almost 14% in certain areas. And that would be the overlaying of sales taxes, which creates a more regressive area, meaning I'm paying higher sales taxes on the area, higher property tax rates on the area, and there's no development in that area.
So can you just say, like, so who is the regressive tax impacting?
It impacts poor people, and that's across the board. So at the state level, it's a couple pieces of legislation that would actually cap all municipalities' ability to increase taxation beyond 14%. This came about because I sit on Ways and Means. I'm also a de facto member of every committee. Ways and Means would be the committee that does all tax laws in the state of Missouri. We look at everything. So in that committee, we overlay the entire state, and we see what's happening in the entire state. So we have issues with TIFs at the state level, and we have issues with regressive taxes at the state level. Our issue with TIFs will go back to the progressive and the regressive tax nature of Kansas City. So TIFs or tax increment finances, which is utilized or should be utilized to redevelop blighted neighborhoods. But we don't see TIFs implemented on the east side, which could go to mixed development usages, which would create a progressive tax situation.
So I'm going to ask a obvious question. Why is that?
Well, that would go to leadership and understanding or creating viable plans.
Uh-huh.
North Kansas City, and I'm trying to keep it on her regressive tax, but I can explain all of it in one. North Kansas City, when they do their TIFs, they write into and codify into that language that the school district will be absolved of any type of negative impact from that TIF zone.
And that's not what happens in Kansas City?
No. And if you look at the east side, I would ask you, where is the school at? Right? Mm-hmm. Besides Central and Southeast and Lincoln. Where are our schools at?
Okay.
Why don't we have none? We don't have TIFs. But the taxation mechanism that we typically use are sales taxes. And the reason I keep saying it's not associated with any type of development, we passed 3 or 4 sales taxes specifically for the east side. Last year they passed a 1-8 cent sales tax or a 3-8 cent sales tax. I was against all of them. They passed one of those. Why?
Okay.
Why are we passing sales taxes that increases the rateization of taxation with no development?
Right.
There's no businesses that's incurring or producing economic activity for us to be paying increased taxes.
Okay, I think that was a decent
And I'll go a little deeper into the taxation because people need to understand the tax code. And the last thing I'll say, because I know you want to move on, mm-hmm. and this goes directly to that lady's question. In America, the tax code only benefits owners. Either you're a business owner or you're a property owner. If you're not a business owner or a property owner, you're paying more than likely regressive taxes off of what you have to acquire. And poor folks spend more money per capita buying little things than we do anywhere else. So if you go into go ahead.
Okay. Well, okay. So great. Thank you, caller, for that insightful question. And as you see, we can go on and on. We have another caller. Caller, please tell us your name and where you're located in the city, and what's the question you have for Representative?
Yeah. Well, hi. My name is Rich, and I live in Overland Park, Kansas. I used to work around 31st and Prospect not too many years ago, 8 or 9 years ago, actually, in a church. And it was right near the shopping center at 31st and Prospect, which, as you probably know, went down financially. It didn't make it. And what I'd like to know from Representative Ellington is what sorts of small businesses do you think would make it in that neighborhood, and also what kind of dollar investment is needed for a small business? It's a lot of capital. What do you think is involved here?
Actually, what I think is involved here is reutilizing our economic tools. So from the state level, it's a lot of incentives for small businesses, whether that's capital to actually or tax credits for small businesses too. So whether that's recapturing the capital that you spend for materials or whatever it is that you're selling. To go directly to the question about the 31st development, one of the reasons that development failed is because they had infrastructure issues with the piping. So if you went in that grocery store, it would smell like sewage. That was one of the main reasons. When you look at the diversification of businesses, it is none. So taking that corner of 31st that you're talking about, you see a Popeyes, you see a chicken store, you see Pizza Hut, and you see Thriftway. Taking it back 10 years, you would have seen that Popeyes, you would have seen that Chinese store across the street, you would have seen a couple low-end clothing stores that were not owned by people in the community. Jump over here to where we're at by the radio station to Midtown. When you drive around Midtown, you see a lot of mom and pop businesses, which creates natural investors in that community. It changes the proximity and diversifies the type of things that you can buy, which increases the rate of amount of people that come into that area. So I think most businesses can thrive as long as they're diverse. We don't have a diversification of businesses. You see hair shops, barbershops, fast food restaurants, which are not owned by people in the community, and nothing that is viable as far as things that are unique about the area. Now, when you talk about small business owners, you talk about a diversification of services, but they have no place to go to. So a few years ago, the city created a project off of 18th and Vine, and then they backed off of that project where they was trying to incentivize businesses to come in. I would like to create a project, something similar to that, using our taxation incentive dollars. So utilizing the TIFs in a different fashion in which TIFs have been utilized. If one goes to Colorado a few years ago was similar to Missouri and similar to Kansas with lack of tax diversification. You hit Colorado right now, Colorado is thriving with new businesses and new infrastructure because they started doing mixed development usages. So in Colorado, you will go to a Colorado and you will see a major tenant. And I just use Costco as an example. You'll use a Costco and then you will mix that Costco with small businesses around there by incentivizing those small businesses to come in, whether that's a tax abatement for the small businesses, freezing property taxes for the people in that area, or things of that nature, which encourages people to come in. And then they also utilizes federal grants and state grants to ensure that people have capital. And I'd be implementing and imitating some of those same initiatives that I've seen in other cities. D.C. is a good example of it, too.
Okay, well, it's great to have examples. We do have another caller, and you're hearing us talking with State Representative Brandon Ellington. We have a caller on line two. Can you please tell us your name and let us know your question, please? What part of the city are you from as well?
Okay, my name is Michael, and I am from the central part of the city, and I might say that Representative Ellington sets the bar for what all elected representatives should be about. His dedication and commitment is pretty evident in just speaking to him for 2 minutes here. My question is around the pre-K initiative that's going to be on our ballots. Unfortunately, I realize that there's always a lot of deception going on at voting time, and I was wondering what his insights would be. Could you share those with us?
Yeah. Out the gate, I'm a no on the sales tax. And this also goes back to the point that I was making earlier, where either people are down here politically playing with people's emotions and playing with people's understanding, or we have local officials that don't understand the proximity and the powers in which they have. So for those that don't know, the city has no influence over education. That's at the state and the school board. The sales tax that the mayor is proposing is ridiculous and is not drafted well at all. And it's also a regressive tax that doesn't benefit anything because it can't control where the dollars are going. I think if the city actually wants to incentivize and encourage educational opportunities, they can. We have a youth fund that's administrated through the city. If the city wants to partner with the school district to create alternative classes outside of that school, they could. We could use our community centers and again partner with the school district to have viable hands-on trade classes, reading classes, etc. That's things that is very viable that can be handled through the city process right now. It would not create a new taxation mechanism. And I believe that we're seeing our mayor trying to create a national platform to run nationally. So we've seen them come out on guns. We've seen them, which is not going to play well in Missouri. We've seen them come out with the pre-K tax, which has no viable benefit to it except for, you know, name recognition and PR. I think the tax is going to fail. I'm in favor of pre-K funding, but I'm against the tax wholeheartedly.
Okay, well, thank you so much for that answer. Right now, listeners, we're just going to take a quick break. You're listening to 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. This is Cowtown Conversations, and this is Marvita Oliver. We'll be right back. All right, and we're back. This is Marvita Oliver. You're listening to 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. And we're here today with our guest, State Representative Brandon Ellington. And Brandon's been giving us a class on educating listeners about what is involved in politics and how do you get effective and impactful change and not just talking about making change. So we do have one more caller. You guys are, I know this is making you hop out there. So while we have one more caller, please tell us your name, where you're from in the city, and let us know your question, please.
Hi, this is Donna again. I hope I don't lose you because I'm on my way to work, and now I'm in the parking lot underground, so I hope you can still hear me. But I had another question for Representative Ellington regarding the recently passed cannabis laws in Kansas, in the state of Missouri, and how is that going to be taxed? How is the state going to handle that, the taxation of that revenue, and who's going to benefit from it? Are the licenses to have these dispensaries being handed out in an equitable fashion, or who's getting the licenses to be a dispensary for the medical marijuana?
No, that's
so I'm going to answer off air.
No, that's okay. That's a great question. I'm gonna have to condense my answers, so don't think I'm being rude. So the license is going through Health and Senior Services right now. So myself and other members of the Black Caucus, we've been holding meetings with the director to ensure that it's going to be no caps on the licenses. According to the constitutional amendment, it has to be two per congressional district, but it does not give you the any limitation amount. So one of the things that we're fighting for is no limitations, which should ensure that all people in the state of Missouri have access for ownership, and then the free market decides who actually benefits. But saying that, after the rules are finally drafted, because the rules are not drafted, you have the constitutional amendment, which gives you a rubric. Health and Senior Services is responsible for drafting the law and administration, and they're still doing that right now. That probably won't be done until around June, maybe July, something like that. Then it falls down to the cities. So in Colorado and a couple of states that they've actually passed it, you've seen pushback in local political orchestration. That's something on the council I'll be working with to ensure that there are no ordinances that block stuff out. And I could just throw the payday lenders in there. For example, we have more payday lenders on the east side because of an ordinance that the city has, which would not allow traditional lenders in that same space. So I'll be working on a local level to guarantee that there's no blockages ordinance-wise for people to get in. From the state level, the health department is responsible for drafting the legislation, and what we're fighting for is a guarantee that there will be no caps across the board. Without that, it would not be equity across the board. It would be big businesses that own it. And in the constitutional amendment, they have a couple provisions that persuade all of the influence to big business. And one of the ones that I can highlight out the gate is the one that says that to own a legal grow operation, you will have to have experience. Well, you can't have legal experience in growing marijuana in a state that is not legal to grow marijuana in, which means you would be coming from Colorado, California, Ohio, or one of these other states that have already legalized the substance and has experience in it. If that, and I hope that answered everything.
All right. Well, this is Cowtown Conversations. We're here with State Representative Brandon Ellington, and this is Marvita Oliver. We're just going to go back on a couple of the comments that you've made earlier. One is you talked about there was some mention about 31st and Prospect or near that area, 31st and Cleveland. There's been a gas leak at the KC oil station located at Cleveland and 31st Street. Some people have actually died from exposure to the gasoline. Others have had their health severely impacted. What do you advocate to help these 3rd District residents and those who live near that area?
First, anybody that stays between 31st and Prospect over to Lister down to 27th Street, I suggest that you sue the city, the state, and Shell. And the reason I suggest that, you said people have died from there. Well, they would combat that. We were saying there is no recorded deaths. That's because nobody has filed a wrongful death suit over in that area. The area is highly contaminated. The records are sitting in the Secretary of State's office, the Attorney General's office, and they also have a link on their website that would give people updates to what they've been doing in the court proceedings. We've had 2 attorney generals since then. Holly was one. He's gone now. And now Eric Smith is now our attorney general, who sits over it. Shell, we have a petroleum insurance fund that all gas companies have to pay into. Shell has paid into that petroleum insurance fund, so they feel that they're absolved of any type of responsibility because the petroleum insurance fund was supposed to administrate and make sure that it was cleaned up. The state is involved because the state has fixed certain sewer piping from that way, and this shows you a guilty hand. Because at the state, we don't do local infrastructure repairs, but we have done that. It's several cancer cluster issues in the area, meaning families have the same cancer that they're getting that I believe is directly related to the incident. From the state level, I've requested an EPA investigation. I requested a cancer cluster study. We have not gotten Cleaver on board. We've done a couple protests in front of his office, and by him being our federal congressman, it would be extremely easy to get the EPA in and to advance that cancer cluster study with his help. The issue with the cancer cluster study would be the time frame of data, and I know we're 3 years behind in calculating data, and I also suggest that people reach out to Department of Natural Resources if they smell gas when it rains or anything like that. That way we can bring the Department of Natural Resources over there, because if you're not on the list, which is sad, they will not investigate the area, which does not increase the danger zone. And in the sewer area, they also have, I know I have to condense the answer, they also have plumes. Plumes travel, so the contamination area 9 times out of 10 is beyond that zone in which I gave you.
Okay, so once again, you're saying if someone is living in that area, I'm not sure how many blocks you are covering there, but if there is someone who's living in that area, you suggest that
they sue.
File a suit against the city
and the state,
and that there should be funds
and
to
Zill.
Cover this type of these type of claims.
Well, there are funds.
Yeah.
And we also see, and this goes back to one of the reasons why I'm running, we also see an orchestration from Eastside leadership. So a few years ago, it was a $300,000 allocation that was cut. A deal that was cut. I'm trying to think of the right word because I'm trying to go fast. It was a deal that was cut. They took $300,000, said it was not going to be a problem. So a lot of people in that area don't understand or have the full context of the situation. But that $300,000 cash out that they got does not affect the whole area. Like, if you live in that area, you should sue. Like, no ifs, ands, or buts, because that gets the city involved. I've done several town halls. I brung down the state health department. The city health department refuses to get engaged, and I believe they refuse to get engaged because this goes back to the 3-tier levels of liability that I believe is associated with the people that are getting contaminated from the gas that has been spilled and is now in the dirt and in the sewer.
Oh, all right. Well, if they were going to sue,
you get your private attorney and then you sue the city for health violations, you sue the state for contamination issues, you sue Zill LLC, and then you sue Inner City Oil.
Okay, well, moving right along, we have a couple more callers on the line. Our next caller, please tell us your name, where you are located in the city, and please let us know your question. Keep it a little short if you can, because we're running out of time. We have other callers on the line. Go ahead, caller.
Hello. Hello. I just wanted to say a quick statement for Representative Ellington. He is one of the best and brightest in Jeff City. He's a fighter, and I'm excited that he's going to be here full-time in Kansas City. He's got my full support. Thank you.
No, thank you, and I need your help because a lot of the African-American leadership, they're fearful of me coming home because they know I'm going after the pot of money that they've been stealing from the citizens. So I definitely need your help.
Okay. All right, we have another caller on the line. Please let us know your name, the part of the city you're from, and the question you have for the representative.
Yeah, this is Jeff, and I'm in the 3rd District. And one of the things that the representative did here recently was take a walk through my neighborhood to show the trash on the streets. And I wanted to know, you know, whether he's got a particular any particular ideas on how we can address this. It's something that we as citizens here have been fighting and, you know, gotten into problems with people on the street, dumping trash, trying to run them out of our neighborhood. You got some ideas as to what we can do?
Yes, no, I do. Redirecting some of this funding that we use on fictitious crime programs. We have a hindsight spotter that hasn't stopped any type of crime, but we still allocate money to it. But we don't put cameras and enforce the law in areas that we know are ripe for dumping. So one would be to clean the area first, because the area needs to be clean. And then we start enforcing by utilizing our cameras and guaranteeing that we find these individuals. I'm also going to increase the fine rate for those individuals that dump, because nobody in that area is dumping all that trash that lives in that area. People are driving in there, and the city is making it ripe for dumping by allowing the trash to sit there and not going after the individuals that are dumping. So to be extremely aggressive with our agents to actually go after those that are dumping, as opposed to being aggressive with those that live in the area that don't have money to put paint on their house, utilizing some of our safety dollars, because this is a public safety issue and it's a health issue, using some of our safety dollars to guarantee that we have hardware in place to actually capture license plates, cars that are coming, and then heavily fine and go after these individuals.
All right, and we're going to have another caller. And I think, too, there's something that to be said about, you wouldn't necessarily consider that cleaning up the trash would help impact crime in an area. But it's directly related. If you're not, if they see that the area is not taken care of, then somebody's going to come in and find that an attractive place to land for crime. So we have another caller on the line. Thank you, caller, so much for calling in with some great questions, helping give insight to people out there. What's your name? What part of the city are you living in? And what's your question?
Yes, my name is Freddie Malone, and I live right off of 350 and Eastwood Traffic Way.
And go ahead with your question. Thank you.
Okay. First, I want to tell the representative that I am angry with him. I met him down on the at the community center down on Van Brunt in Cleveland a few years ago. He had a meeting down there on Saturday, and I spoke with him and said I wanted to volunteer. I'm an older black gentleman, and I wanted to volunteer and mentor somebody, and he said he was going to get back with me, but he never did.
No, I actually apologize for that. I'm going to give you all my contact info, and I have Sammy definitely get in touch with you, but I do apologize for that because I run a lot. And I'm Charles Johnson runs all my brother's keeper for me. He typically would reach out, but he's in the hospital right now. My number up there is 573-751-3129, and then the email is brandon.ellington@house.mo.gov, but I do apologize. But you can always catch me on the weekends, because I'm only here on the weekends, at 3836 Chestnut. But I do apologize for not getting back in touch with you for the volunteering, because we need as much help as we can get.
Okay, and can you just say that number one more time to get in touch with?
573-751-3129.
And your
email. Brandon, B-R-A-N-D-O-N, Ellington, at house.mo.gov. The reason I gave you that one, my assistant Sammy would guarantee that I get the message and I get it out.
Okay, well, thanks so much. Now, one last thing I would like to do before we close up for the for today's show is just give you a minute maybe to give us a closing statement, what you want to see, what you want people to know, so they might want to vote for you.
I would like to see a viable city. I would like to see a city that stops faking with the residents of the city and actually produces wins for people that live here. There's nothing wrong with development tools if the development tools are being utilized to benefit the community. Government does not create money within itself. All government dollars comes from taxation and comes from the people that live in that area. So when we talk about buildings and new builds and incentives to small businesses, that's something I expect the city to be incentivizing. When we talk about violent crime, I expect the city to actually be addressing the under causes of violent crime, not saying that we need more police, not saying that we can't do anything because the state won't change gun laws, not saying that Bozo was on the moon and this is why people are shooting each other. No, it's real reasons why we have high crime rates on the east side of Kansas City, which goes to infrastructure repair, educational opportunities, employment opportunities, understanding the transitional nature of the element of crime. I would like to see a city that encompasses all of that. I would like to see a city that is actually producing policies that is in line with state law, meaning we're not wasting taxpayer dollars on initiatives that we know can never go anywhere because we want to be highlighted in the press. And if you're looking for somebody that has a track record of actually fighting for the community, when I talk about community, I'm talking about across the board. My current district goes from Truth to Independence, Missouri. So when we talk about people that are going to be authentic, we need to start electing mayors and council members that are going to be authentic.
Okay, well, thank you so much. We've been talking with State Representative Brandon Ellington. He was invited today with another candidate who was not able to make it, Pastor Wallace S. Hartfield II. And we've been hearing a lot about what it takes to have some political knowledge so that you can have a sustainable impact on the city, not only for our political candidates, but for our citizens as well. We want to say thank you so much for joining us today.
No, thank you. It was fun.
All right. Okay, so you know this is Cowtown Conversations, and we never end Cowtown Conversations without our Community Minute. Northland Neighborhoods will host a city council candidate meet and greet on March 21st at the Northland Neighborhoods offices located at 4420 Northeast Shoto, Suite 100. And that's from 5 to 7 p.m. tonight. And for Cowtown Conversations, this has been your hostess, Marvita Oliver. Glad to be back. There's no place like home. Have a great day and stay tuned for KKFI Soulful, My Place with Larry J. Thank you.